Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
The AmeriChicks. I'm Molly Vogt.
And I am Kim Munson.
And we're excited to be with you every day, Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. drive time while you're on that smooth ride home, as long as you're not in Colorado, because traffic's kind of funny here.
But if you are in traffic, you can listen to us.
Yeah. 1690 a.m.
Life is good.
But if you're not in your car or near a radio, you can also listen live on our website, AmeriChicks.com. You can also download the KDMT app on your phone as well. And all of our shows are updated and saved on SoundCloud on our AmeriChicks website into perpetuity. We'd love for you to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. And since we like to challenge people to be smarter than big government, because we think most of you are, because that's usually how it starts, right? You're smarter than big government till you become big government.
Right.
So we're not talking to those guys. We're talking to the smarter guys. So
you got it.
If you have something on your heart and you have a solution for it, a non-government solution, we want you to share it with us, the AmeriChicks, on our Facebook page. It's AmeriChicks. I am a movement.
And Molly, we are finding more and more people that are putting their thinking cap on, and I'm very encouraged by this.
There's a lot of people out there doing... at least three by now.
It's been more than that.
But yeah, but we're the sleuths for truth. You know, Kimmy and I both came from different backgrounds. Radio is clearly not our gig. But we both came, you know, from different backgrounds, let's just say, and started to get concerned.
I was on the high school yearbook.
Well, I know. And you sang with what? What was the band?
Up With People.
Up With People.
Which is interesting because I can't sing at all, but I can dance a little bit.
Yeah, we know. DeMond actually recorded some of your singing. And when you start talking up, we're going to play that at break.
I'll pay you, DeMond.
But you know, our goal, both of us, is to look at different things that are taking place in the news, in America, in our communities, in our schools, at the local level, at the state, at the federal, and see what's happening. And how is it affecting the people? And it seems like there are policies that the government passed that affect all of us one way or another. And you know how boring politics is for the majority of us? But for some reason, Kimmy, we are the most interesting people in the world to politicians. Why is that?
I'm not sure. I was looking at something else, Molly. You caught me.
Good. All right. Well, anyways, we've got our eyes on them, so it doesn't matter what they're thinking. We're going to watch what they're doing, and we're going to tell you. Now, there have been some changes taking place recently, and a lot of targeting of our youth, a lot of targeting of even our older youth, our millennials, young adults. And we've got some different things going on. Today, we're going to talk about pronouns. And if you've been under a rock, you didn't realize that, you know, sometimes it's not just a girl's or a boy's bathroom anymore. And it doesn't stop there. Then it's, oh, you can't call somebody he or she or I guess he or she, I don't know, or girl or boy, just by looking at them, that's offensive to some people. So we've got to relearn our pronouns. And so that's taking place in colleges today.
Of course, it'd be on college campuses.
Yeah. And so we brought an expert in, and starting in the next segment, he is going to start explaining to us the pronouns and what we should be considering ourselves.
Well, Molly, in the olden days, when I was in grade school, it was he and she. That was it. Now, when you're learning pronouns, you learn the whole ABCs all right there.
Oh, I know. I don't know if you've seen the YouTube video with the English teacher, and she's teaching all these people from different countries, the different languages, and they're like trying to understand. It's really hilarious.
We'll have
to look it up on a break and tell everybody. But anyway, we'll get to that in the second segment with Stephen Kessler. Also, we're going to be talking with Jimmy Sangenberger in the end. He's a millennial. He started a group, millennialpolicycenter.org. Check it out. They have an event coming up, and he's a host right here on KDMT in the mornings from 6 to 9 a.m. He'll be joining us. But
Yay.
Before we get to that, have you noticed, Kim, that advertising, commercials, print, whatever kind of ads, aren't resonating with you so much these days?
With me?
With you, personally.
Huh, I didn't know that.
You didn't know?
How come?
Because you're not the target market for American retailers anymore.
Oh.
Yeah. Wall Street Journal. Americans retailers have a new target customer. It's the 26-year-old millennial.
And what are they trying to sell the 26-year-old millennial?
Everything, but especially life skills.
Oh.
Life skills.
I learned those in school.
Well, there you go. All right. And
but that was back when you only had two pronouns.
Things were so much simpler then.
They were.
But this has actually been the top trending article, one of the top five trending articles in the Wall Street Journal the past 2 days. And so I'm like, we're just going to have to talk about it because clearly it's not going away. People are interested in this. But so, you know, baby boomers were the largest generation. And for a very long time.
They are the largest generation now. They're getting bigger and bigger.
Oh, come on, Kimmy. You look great. Oh, just kidding. So apparently, right now today, actually the number of millennials have surpassed baby boomers. Baby boomers today, according to the census in this article in Wall Street Journal, we have 74 million baby boomers. We have 93 million millennials. Mm. So while baby boomers in the 60s, there were record sales, they were going after them for diapers. And then in the 80s, going after them with power suits. And then in the 2000s, it was luxury cars and handbags. Now they're redoing all of their marketing to go after millennials and specifically the 26-year-old age group. And they said because they have been living with their parents for a while and the majority have not hit the four major life stones that you need to hit. So that would be living away from your parents in your own home, married, living with a child, and joining the labor force. And because only 24%...
And all that happened in the olden days, too.
And because only 24% of our 25, 26-year-olds have experienced those life stones, now they are going to teach them things. So you've got like Home Depot and groups like this, Procter & Gamble, Williams-Sonoma, coming out and teaching basic life skills like how to mow the lawn, how to use a tape measure, how to mop a floor, how to hammer a nail, how to pick a paint color.
Honestly.
Literally, there is a class that teaches people that if you are gardening something, that the plant needs sunlight.
I'm speechless. I don't know what to say to that, Molly.
All right, Stephen Kessler, go ahead and join in here. You've probably seen the article. What do you think about this? It was new to me.
So one of the things that's really happened is the millennial generation, we grew up kind of scarred. We came of age right during 2008, right around the time of the Great Recession.
And this is Stephen Kessler's inaugural radio interview.
Yes.
And so it's great to have you here. You are a millennial and you attended the University of Rochester.
Sure, yeah.
And just explain a little bit about what you're doing so that people understand that you have expertise in this field.
Sure. So I got my master's in higher ed administration from the University of Rochester, and I'm finishing my doctorate. I'll be defending sometime pretty soon this semester. But I went in really unaffiliated politically, and after being, you know, assaulted and undergoing a barrage of hardcore liberal social justice warriors, I turned into a staunch conservative now. And that's kind of how I met you two ladies. And, you know, one of the things that really happened to us was we came of age right during the Great Recession, and it's had a real major impact on us. The other thing that's really been problematic for this generation is that we've been coddled with everything. Mm-hmm. We have participation trophies, there's no losers, there's no winners, there's no real order anymore. It's all about equity. And life is not fair. Life is not equitable.
Now, somebody told me the only fair in life is the county fair and the state fair.
I miss those. That was Florida, though.
Okay.
And I think that's really been the major problem. The other major problem that I have encountered as I really learned what liberalism was that to the liberal, the struggle for good and evil is no longer in the breast of the individual. It's been removed outward to society. And that came from Rousseau. So for most of us, as you know, it was called the old dualism, religious dualism. There was an angel on your right shoulder and an angel or a devil on the left. And it was up to us to make sure the angel got the better of the devil. We've been taught through all this liberal social justice pedagogy that the struggle for good and evil is not in the breast of the individual, it's outward. And so therefore, they're never responsible for their choices. They're always kind of victimized, and things are always kind of happening to them, and it's made them less proactive.
That is absolutely fascinating. You can see why we invited Stephen Kessler on. He is a millennial. He's, you said, getting your...
My doctorate.
Your doctorate, yeah. University of Rochester. We have a mutual friend, Brian Dimitrovic, is who introduced us.
He's the best.
We're fans as well. And, of course, Brian has just written a book with Larry Kudlow regarding supply-side economics.
Iconoclasts. About the Reagan and Kennedy supply side revolution in economics. I can't really speak anything other than the cover.
Yeah,
well, we've had him on several times, and we love talking about it because, you know, we say we look at issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And it both, you know, Reagan was a Republican and Kennedy was a Democrat, but they both were able to pass, you know, lower taxes. They were able to pass sweeping tax reforms. They were able to get our economy booming again. And that's what we'd like to get our Congress to do right now. It doesn't matter if it's the Republicans or the Democrats, but somebody needs to do it. And they made proof. Brian Dimitrovic and Larry Kudlow laid out the proof that it can be done. And it's not a party line thing.
Well, if I can interject here. When you say you like to look at things as right versus wrong and not right versus left, that's actually one of the major problems, is that with liberalism today, the emphasis on equity has shoehorned its way into things, and that there is no longer what Russell Kirk referred to as an enduring moral order. There is no longer right or wrong. It's all subjective. It's something called postmodernism.
Let's hold that thought. Sure. Stephen Kessler, a millennial, getting his doctorate from University of Rochester. We're talking about what's going on college campuses and also what's going on in his brain. So this is Molly and Kim. We'll be right back.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts, Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment. And since these loans are government insured, limited closing fees. Active duty military, reserves, National Guard, retired military, and surviving spouses may qualify. Give Kim Sturtz or Mark Cook at Home Mortgage Alliance a call today at 303-888-2732. Or check them out on the AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com. Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender and sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507. In America, we stand on the shoulders of giants. Benjamin Franklin and other founding fathers handed us a republic and challenged us to keep it. The challenge remains today, more than 240 years later. The AmeriChicks invite you to call in every weekday afternoon at 5 p.m. to sort through the smoke and mirrors to discuss government policies as right versus wrong rather than right versus left. Denver's only female-hosted call-in talk show on your drive home. The AmeriChicks, Kim Monson and Molly Vogt, sponsored by Yanni's in the Landmark for the best lamb chops in town. Weekday afternoons at 5 on KDMT, Denver's Money Talk, 1690 AM.
Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
It's time. October is here, and the scary features are hitting the screen. Please join the historic 88 Drive-In Theater and be sure to bring someone to hold on to for their upcoming triple features. Admission at 88 Drive-In Theater is only $8 per person, and children under 12 are free. Your admission includes all features. Stay for one or all three. New fall box office hours are 6 p.m. Friday and Saturday and 6:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday. To stay up to date on movie showings and times, go to 88drivein.net and like the 88 Drive-In on Facebook. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
It's Tuesday. What are you going to do? I say just go to the movie theater. Give yourself a break. Go out to the historic 88 Drive-In. It's not even a movie theater that's closed inside. It's open. You're in your car. You're with your family. You're looking out at the stars. It's awesome. And so let me just give you the features right here. The Lego Ninjago movie, 6:50 p.m. Then once the kids fall asleep, it's scary time because it's October. Blade Runner starts 2049 at 8:40 p.m. And then It. At 11:20.
Is that a pronoun?
I don't know. I'm not allowed to say. I don't want to get arrested. I know I'm not in California, but you never know if Jerry Brown's listening. Don't get me in trouble, Kimmy.
I got it. So, you know, Molly, we are sleuths for truth. We educate, inspire, and engage by dissecting issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. So we're going to come back to that thought in just a moment because we have in studio with us Stephen Kessler. He's getting his doctorate from the University of Rochester, initially in higher education, which that is... I watch what's going on there, and it looks to me like it's off the rails. But before we do that, we have another place that you can go to think about things, and that is the Centennial Institute at Colorado Christian University. Because if you're concerned and perplexed about the events happening in America today, you can go to them for answers. They sponsor research, events, and publications so that you can understand the most important issues facing our state and nation. They proclaim truth. They foster faith, family, and freedom. Isn't that a novel idea? Teach citizenship, again, a novel idea, and renew the spirit of 1776. So check out their website at ccu.edu. And you'll find their latest publications as well as a schedule of upcoming events, and that is ccu.edu. So that kind of sets us up, Stephen Kessler. I think that we were talking a little bit about right and wrong.
Sure.
And
postmodernism.
Postmodernism. And I think it really happened kind of back in this, when we got to a point where everybody was good. Everybody had their opinion. We're just going to chill out. Everything's relative. We moved away from any foundation, any order, and so we've been building our ideas on sand. And then if you're challenged on those ideas and you can't stand up for your ideas, then you're a victim and you're being bullied. Would you agree?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks. That's why we asked you on. We said, okay, you have to agree with us. No, we didn't.
Sure. So the idea of postmodernism, Jordan Peterson talks about it a lot. He's become a real active Twitter presence and Facebook presence. He's a professor at Toronto, and he was one of the original guys who said, I'm not going to give in to this social justice pronoun nonsense. And so what postmodernism is, and Peter Lawler has a great book called Postmodernism, I think rightly understood. He recently died, unfortunately. But postmodernism is a denial of objectivity, and it's the stepchild of equity, that there is no difference between, you know, my opinion is just as good as yours. Now, we're talking about Brian Dmitrovic, brilliant economic historian. I know nothing about the economy. My opinion is just as good as his in a postmodern world. And my favorite example of postmodernism in action are people called fat activists. Now, these are people who, you know, they have a really plausible premise. The premise is body positivity, that, you know, we're not all models. We're not all going to look perfect. You got to learn to love yourself. Great. But they take it a little bit too far. And then they say that there is no real objective measure of health, that you can be healthy at any size and any weight. And that is just not true. There's no doctor out there that'll say a morbidly obese person is healthy. And so that's like the quintessential example for me of what postmodernism is, that there can be no enduring moral order. There can be no right or wrong. It's really subjectivism. And the more we make things subjective, the worse things become, because
it's very difficult to argue subjective.
Sure.
You know, when you're in a debate with somebody, and I bet you're pretty good at it, but I find myself struggling a little bit because I'm looking at it, I'm going, that doesn't make any sense. But I'm not quite sure what to say about it.
But also, if there's no real truth, and there's no security, you can have no confidence in anything. There's no stability. You know,
that's a good point.
Four plus four is four today, but now there's the next king or the next, you know, political party takes over, and now four plus four is five, and it really doesn't matter what you learned. Everything changes. And I think those of us who want truth and want to continue to strive for truth and teach truth want to make sure that everybody's protected, and that protects people is security and truth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure. And so even if people say all of us vote here that four plus four is five, we may all agree that it's five, but the truth is that it's
sure.
Eight.
So it's an ad populum, meaning to the masses. It's a logical fallacy.
Two plus
simply
two isn't
because,
eight, Kim.
Because lots of people want
Did
it.
Did I say two plus two?
You said two plus two is eight.
Oh, I meant four plus four.
Yeah.
Thanks for
it. Yeah.
I'm relative.
Give her an X, Damon.
Okay. Sure. And really, where we want to go back to this idea of might makes right, the ad populum, with everything in liberalism, we must go back to the Enlightenment, and we must go back to a guy named Rousseau. Rousseau in The Social Contract said that there could be no intermediary bodies between the individual and the general will, the Leviathan, big government, big brother of the state. Those intermediary bodies were the church, the family unit, the corporate trade guild, and he said nothing in between them, might makes right. And he's also the guy, and I don't want to be naive and suggest that emotion was never really involved in argument prior to it, but he wrote a book called Eloise. And in a fantastic book by Peter Stanlis called Edmund Burke, Enlightenment and Revolution, he talks about that book That book was the real book that changed people and made people much more emotional, that made people much more sentimental, and it flew off the shelves. And that was the real reason why feelings now trump fact. And it's why you'll hear somebody like Ben Shapiro say, well, my facts don't care about your feelings, and that people's feelings from that moment forward suddenly became much more important than other things.
Well, so Stephen, would you mind? We're talking with Stephen Kessler, and he's doing his doctorate right now with the University of Rochester, and he's a good friend of our good friend Brian Dmitrovic. You and you're a millennial on the upper end, on the edge. Now, we'd asked you to explain to us and help us understand all the different pronouns and the genders and stuff. And it seems like this is a good place to kind of get into that, since you're talking about what is true and what's an opinion and what changes. And so why are people able to redefine our biology all of a sudden?
Sure. So I'm going to explain what liberalism is and how it is defined. Liberalism, and the great Robert Nisbet, for those of you who aren't familiar, I was talking about these intermediary bodies and the Leviathan. Robert Nisbet is a brilliant mind. He founded the sociology department at Berkeley. He's no longer alive, but get into him. So Nisbet defines liberalism as a devotion to the individual and his or her ever-increasing liberties and freedoms. Three pillars of liberalism are equity, that we're all equals at all times, at all things. And the liberal wants equity prima facie. Any kind of inequality is immoral to him, even though it is unfair that LeBron James and Michael Jordan are billionaires, but that's a just inequality, but not to the liberal. They don't like any kind of inequity. Number two, autonomy, the freedom to choose. The liberal always wants the option to choose, and anything that restricts it, anything that puts restraints on the liberal's appetites and passions is immoral. And finally, the language of rights. Everything is a right to the liberal. And so this, you know, for example, why do they get to choose their gender? Because we're equal, because I have the right to choose, and who are you to tell me? You know, anything that restricts the individual's freedom is not acceptable to the liberal. And so that's really where it stems from.
Now, Stephen, we're talking with Stephen Kessler. Just a question, though, because in the olden days, liberal, you know, was really kind of a freedom kind of thing. I've been wondering, is this really liberal or is this progressivism? I mean, tell me about that, the label. Tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So there's lots of different labels. You know, lots of people define different things differently, but ultimately it depends on the substance. Progressivism, a lot of people like Dinesh D'Souza or Jonah Goldberg, who do fantastic work, they'll tell you that progressivism originated in America in like the 1800s. But the truth of the matter is, the original progressive was Rousseau, and he based it on an a priori assumption that we were born good, but society corrupts us. And prior to that, that was, again, the old dualism. And from Rousseau's progressivism, a guy named the Marquis de Condorcet moved forward. He took it a step further, and he's the original meliorist, which is ironically the name of the University of Rochester's, it's our motto. Meliora means ever better. But it's not just, improvement in science and technology and medicine. It's improvement in one key area, the human condition. And the conservative does not believe that the human condition grows or changes. The human condition is constant, mm-hmm. that we as human beings are unchanged over the course of thousands of years. And so to the liberal, history is the dead weight of our ancestors. That's old world fuddy-duddy stuff. But to the conservative, history is the accumulation of the wisdom of our ancestors.
Well, that totally makes sense, Steve, looking at what's taking place today with them tearing down, you know,
our statues.
And that's obviously that's taking place in America today. But we had Helen Riley on here talking about what happened in the 60s in China. They did the same thing. They were tearing down the statues. They were taking down, you know, museums and artifacts. And they went to their homes and took away their books that had centuries of genealogy of their families to get rid of, because none of that is true, because they're going to rewrite history.
It's the dead weight of yesteryear. Let it go. We're going to rewrite it. The original people, Edmund Burke talked about them, the Jacobins. They were the original ones who were doing this rewriting history. That's what Edmund Burke was talking about. Edmund Burke is the founder of conservatism, and he is a true genius when it comes to the human condition. That maybe he might not have had Einstein's brain for math and science, but nobody knew human beings quite like the Right Honorable Edmund Burke. And in his four letters on a regicide peace, and the regicides were the Jacobins, you know, these people who were just tearing down society, rebuilding it in their own image, destroying everything, using everything for, you know, for their destruction or their benefit.
Mm-hmm. And so, so that was Antifa's great grandparents.
Yes, yes, yes. 100%. 100%. That's exactly correct.
So what we're saying is they were doing it then, they're doing it now. So that goes right into the conservatives' worldview that man is fallible.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And that we all have this potential for good and evil within us.
Sure, sure. So the Judeo-Christian tradition, the idea that because Adam and Eve sinned, we are therefore, what's the phrase?
Fallen or?
Yeah, yeah. We are afflicted by their actions and we are forever, you know, we are forever sinning. And so the idea, particularly if we stumble into the Second Amendment, we have to ask ourselves if we believe that the founding fathers thought the Second Amendment was, you know, temporalizing specific to that time, or if they thought that it was the human condition is constant, and they knew over the course of time and history that there would always be some kind of, you know, great, you know, weapon that would come along. And so I lost my train of thought.
Well, I think let me see if I can try to finish it. So what you're saying is that the liberal, because they think that that man is good, that we can make society better, right?
Infinitely perfectible through social planning.
So that would be their premise, would be if you get rid of firearms, then it's going to be a utopia.
Yes, exactly.
But
we know better than that.
We've always tried to make a utopia. We tried utopia in Russia. We tried it in Nazi Germany, but they keep trying it over and over and over again. Utopia doesn't work because what it would take to get to their idea of utopia is everybody has to be exactly the same in the exact same chains.
It has to be aligned to their politics. Mm-hmm, correct. So that's what Russell Kirk calls the drug of ideology. In my favorite Russell Kirk book, for those of you who don't know, I was a fellow at the Russell Kirk Center. I want to give a shout out to the Russell Kirk Center for Cultural Renewal in Macosta, Michigan.
And Brad Berzer, isn't he a real
Russell Kirk scholar?
And he's a friend of ours as well.
Yeah, he's
interesting.
He's a big Russell Kirk scholar. He wrote a fantastic biography on the guy. But one of Russell Kirk's big fights in his life was fighting the drug of ideology. These people who believe that through positive planning and that if we conform to their view, then we can achieve a terrestrial utopia. And it's largely what Stalinism was.
Fascinating. You know, I would venture to say that we have some of that going on right here in Colorado. We've got people thinking that they can plan our lives, plan our travel, plan our health care, all kinds of things. And obviously, typically it doesn't work. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Ken Munson. We're here with Stephen Kessler talking about college and thoughts and conservatism.
Dude, I need help. How can I perfect my golf swing and keep my promise to put in a whole new kitchen by next month?
No worries. Call Rafe and Colin at Harmony Ridge Construction. They've been doing this for 40 years all over the globe. Trust me, they'll make you look like a genius, and you'll have more time to perfect that golf swing. You really need to work on that.
Great. I'll give Harmony Ridge Construction a call today. What's their number?
720-660-0265. Or visit them online at harmonyridgeconstruction.com. They're best for any small fix or large remodel. They'll help you out.
Guy Whidden, 101st Airborne, landed Normandy in the dark on D-Day 1944, was knocked out on the jump, woke up, a gun to his head. What happened next? If you love the AmeriChicks World War II Project on Fridays and know a World War II vet, we'd love to share their story. We're in a race against time to gather as many stories as possible and as quickly as possible to preserve them for all future generations. So if you know a World War II vet or have that great World War II story to share, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com.
And now, the Lens of Liberty. Here is Helen Kriebel.
There have been many news stories about one mayor's drive to ban large soft drinks, and nearly everyone thought the effort was a classic case of government overreach. I've never bought a big gulp soda, but I cherish my right to do so. We all understand the dangers of too much sugar in our diets, but most people know government has more important things to worry about than the size of our sodas. If we look through the lens of liberty, we might realize this is really not much different than the government determining how our hamburgers must be cooked or what kind of light bulbs we must buy. In America, we believe in taking responsibility for our own actions and providing for our own happiness. Sometimes we need to remind politicians to take care of important government business and let us take care of our own business.
For more information, go to lensofliberty.org. That's lensofliberty.org.
Hey, This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. Don't forget, every Friday is World War II Project Day because we love to share the stories of the greatest generation and their personal testimonies of what they went through and what they saw when they risked everything to go save people they would never meet from tyranny. And of course, we all are fighting tyranny still today. And we're going to talk about why. We're going to continue to talk about why on this show with Molly Kim and with Stephen Kessler. But before we do that, I'd like to give a quick shout out to EvanYourITGuy.com. This is a sponsor and a partner of ours. EvanYourITGuy's just doing a great thing, and they're hiring veterans. So I thought it'd be great to highlight that as well. Evan is a network of IT professionals ready to provide on-demand help with your computer needs 24/7. Doesn't matter what's going on, what time of day it is. If you've got a problem, hardware, software, you know, memory, speed, whatever it is, give them a call and they can help you. And then also they're giving away to AmeriChicks friends a free webcam cover. And it's a really cool deal. So you can take that dirty tape off your computer and just stick this thing on there and it slides back and forth when you want to be seen and when you don't. Choice is nice. Check out Evan, your IT guy. In order to get the camera, you go onto their website, scroll to the bottom. Under Discovery, you'll see free webcam cover. Click it, fill out the form, give them your mailing address, say AmeriChicks, and they will send you a free webcam cover. And again, they're hiring veterans. If you know any veterans looking for a job with IT skills, check out Evan, your IT guy.
You got it. So we are already in the third segment. We have so much we want to talk to our new friend, Stephen Kessler, about. He is he's a millennial, and he has studied higher education, which I tell you, Molly, when I look at what's going on college campuses, it is just unbelievable. It seems dumb to me.
It is. Well, it seems like there's a redefining of absolutely everything. And that's why it's so refreshing to be able to talk with Steve Kessler, because he's doing his doctorate right now, right, at the University of Rochester. Mm-hmm. And he is a very intelligent guy. And it sounds like he's really digging into all the different philosophies and the different ways of thought. And for some reason, he's actually chosen to go the way of liberty.
So, yeah, a couple of things. We're going to talk fast because we have so much we want to talk to you about. So first thing, you were explaining the difference between liberalism, and then we're going to talk about conservatism, and then libertarianism. So let's jump in, a refresher on liberalism.
Real quick, yeah. So liberalism, devotion to the individual, the central unit of life. Three pillars are equity, autonomy, and the language of rights. Conservatism comes from the feudal tradition where the family unit is the central unit of life. All groups either consciously or unconsciously mirror the family unit. The three pillars of conservatism are community, authority, and the sacred, meaning some kind of an ethic of purity, spirituality that we've kind of gotten rid of in Western civilization. So libertarianism, on the other hand, is Robert Nisbet, is what Robert Nisbet referred to as the uneasy cousin of conservatism. It puts the emancipated individual at the central unit of life, and the three pillars are limited government, autonomy, and the philosophy of their patron saint, John Stuart Mill, who in 1859 wrote On Liberty, where he said, look, if it's not hurting anyone, then I should be able to do it.
Yeah, I've heard that before. Okay.
Murray Rothbard is the godfather of the American libertarian movement. He was a professor at UNLV.
Okay, okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about to college campus, your
sure.
experience. You went to the University of Rochester. And you were ostracized, but you didn't quite know why, right?
I haven't finished yet, so I'll try to be polite. I'm going to have to defend my dissertation.
Okay.
Sure, yeah, so I didn't really know why, and then I kind of learned, and it was because I was white, male, able-bodied, cisgendered, heterosexual, reasonably fit and attractive, and the pedagogy is social justice, critical theory, neo-Marxism, the Frankfurt School, and they believe that we were born good, but society corrupts us. And we have to therefore fix society. And society is inequitably structured to favor those who are white, male, able-bodied, and cisgendered, heterosexual. We are successful, people like me, people like you two, because we step on the heads and shoulders of those who are unsuccessful. And the people who are unsuccessful because society is not favored to structure
them. Well, you hear this narrative out there all the time now.
Sure, sure.
Well, that's the narrative that Hitler gave.
Well, instead of rugged individualism, the American idea, you know, I mean, it's been a head scratcher to me that people are buying into this, but they are, especially on college campuses.
Hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
There are certain times when you're told you can't do that, that I've been like, ooh, then you let me just prove it. But that's only because I think my parents did such a good job at the beginning telling me that I can do anything I want. And unfortunately, I think there's a lot of kids that didn't have parents that told them that they could and really promoted them. And so when they get this negative message coming around saying you can't do this because of, you know, your color or your sex or whatever.
Well, I think it's in the education
system.
You came
from another country or whatever, you know, that when they tell you can't do it, but it's just cruel.
You know, Stephen, I know for a fact that instead of like lit classes, you know, learning Shakespeare and you know, thinking about big ideas,
sure, yeah,
that, you know, they're doing like Black Lives Matter authors. And it is beyond me that people are paying money or this is happening in our public schools. It's just beyond me because there's such richness to the human spirit. I always said to my kids, I think art should celebrate the human spirit.
Sure. Yeah, T.S. Eliot once said something wonderful in an essay called Tradition and Individual Talent, where he said, you know, it's not the job of the poet to find eccentricity in poetry. In doing so, he will only find the perverse. You must speak to the constancy of the human condition. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Shakespeare is still valuable to us because of that reason, but it's no longer, it's now seen only through the lens of identity politics. Shakespeare, white male, not good. You know, it's this, you know, most basic.
It's so sad to me.
Ad hominem argument, you know,
yeah,
to the man, where you insult the character of a person, or rather, you know, you critique the person's character rather than their statements. And so that's really, it's all about identity politics. And there's not a lot of learning going on.
Okay, so you finally figured out that, you know, for some reason, people, you know, some people kind of looked at you, I don't know, not mad at you, I guess. I don't know what the word would be. And
envy. Egalitarian envy.
Yeah. So how did you get from where you were to being a conservative and, you know, being a fellow at the Russell Kirk
Center? Yeah.
Center. I mean, how did you make that journey?
I stumbled into a book which mentioned another guy. It mentioned a book by John Haidt called The Happiness Hypothesis. And I love John Haidt's book. John founded the Heterodox Academy. He's at NYU now, and he has promotes viewpoint diversity on campus. He then had a paper called Planet of the Durkheimians, where community, authority, and sacredness are moral foundations of life. I read it, and that was based on a book by some guy named Robert Nisbet called The Sociological Tradition. Bought it used on Amazon. That's all she wrote. It changed my life.
So then what did you do?
I just became kind of consumed with learning, you know, this you know, scholarly conservative material. And I got a couple of publications. I wanted to become a fellow at the Russell Kirk Center. And I'm plowing through my dissertation. And that's what I did.
You know, at this point in time, what, you know, if you had your ideal job, what is it you'd like to do?
College professor, teaching classical conservative thought and policy, talking about what liberalism is, where it comes from, what conservatism is, where it comes from, what they believe, with taking an emphasis on the conservative side.
Okay, people out there listening, we could sure use Stephen Kessler at some of our places of higher education. Molly, do you think we should switch over? We're going to be coming into break here, but one of the things that we were talking about when we first met is that there's 50 different gender identifications. And I, like I say, I grew up he and she. So what the heck is going on?
You are so
sure.
Old.
I know. So let's start this up. We'll go to break and we'll finish it
Make
up then.
Make us hip.
Oh, okay. I'm sure. So people who are, there used to be two genders, and now that people who are considered traditional male and females, we don't say they're normal. We say they are cisgendered. And that's the term, because you don't want to say it's normal versus, you know, not normal. And so then there's cisgendered or binary gendered people. We identify as male or female. And
sounds like Common Core math. It's Common
sure.
Core
you,
pronouns.
I was totally thinking that.
We spend too much time together.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. So there's gender fluid people who identify partially, and there's even things like other kin now, which is people who identify not with human beings, but as animals.
I've seen cat ladies. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it on the internet. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I loved Michelle Pfeiffer too, but it just didn't happen for me.
Sure. And so a hand.
Jeez.
Cat lady.
It took me a minute.
Yeah, I
got
it.
Halle
I got
Berry.
It.
Anyway.
Damon, you liking that?
Halloween. I got it out of my system at Halloween.
Okay.
Sure. And so And so now there's everybody can just pick and choose their gender. It just goes back to the idea of autonomy. And anything that stands in the way of you choosing to live your life as you see fit is immoral. And the idea of autonomy for the liberal is fundamentally incongruent with authority for the conservative. So the conservative believes that when the restraints on our passions and appetites are removed,
Harvey Weinstein.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. When there's no, our passions run amok. And that's really, Lucy and Linus.
Yeah.
No consequences.
Yeah.
There's no consequences.
When the cat's away, the mice are at play.
Everything.
Yeah.
But for some reason, dogs and dogs together have puppies and cats and cats have cats. I'm just very confused. You know, I'm not a science denier. I'm just saying we need to talk about this. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. We'll be right back.
In America, we stand on the shoulders of giants. Benjamin Franklin and other founding fathers handed us a republic and challenged us to keep it. The challenge remains today, more than 240 years later. The AmeriChicks invite you to call in every weekday afternoon at 5 p.m. to sort through the smoke and mirrors to discuss government policies as right versus wrong rather than right versus left. Denver's only female-hosted call-in talk show on your drive home. The AmeriChicks, Kim Monson and Molly Vogt, sponsored by Yanni's in the Landmark for the best lamb chops in town. Weekday afternoons at 5 on KDMT, Denver. Denver's Money Talk, 1690 AM.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing from the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, chances are your future clients do too. Let us help you promote your business and fatten up your wallet. To feature your business on the AmeriChicks program, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. We feature the most topical news and intriguing guests every weekday during afternoon drive time, 5 to 6 p.m., while you and your clients are enjoying the program on your way home from work. So become a sponsor today by emailing the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com. Or visit us online at AmeriChicks.com.
Today you need to have a great online and social media presence, and the best in the biz is Desi On Demand. The AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, personally work with Brandon, the founder of Desi On Demand. Desi On Demand is instrumental with our video projects, Chick Chat, Eggs, Exceptional Endeavors, and our World War II project. We most heartily endorse his creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity. Brandon and his team bring all that to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com or call 303-359-1522 for more info, and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
And Kim, for myself, but hopefully y'all
there
can hear
are.
Me out there. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim on KDMT. And, you know, we have a millennial in studio, Stephen Kessler. He is doing his doctorate at the University of Rochester. And he's explaining a lot of things to these old chicks that are trying to learn some new
Speak
tricks.
Speak for yourself.
Talking about Kim specifically. And so that's really great. We're learning about all the different pronouns and we're kind of learning the difference between liberalism, conservatism, and libertarianism as far as that's concerned, and the utopia that it seems like it doesn't matter generation after generation.
Utopia
the
typically doesn't work out for very
totalitarianism.
Well for
they're always trying to get us back to the mm-hmm. same place. But before we continue on with that, I invited another millennial to come on and join us. I was listening this morning to Jimmy Singerberger show right here on KDMT every day 6 to 9 a.m. Is that right, Jimmy?
That's right.
Uh-huh. And Jimmy was talking about this article that I had noticed on Wall Street Journal that was in the top five trending both today and yesterday. So I'm like, I love that you're talking about it. I had that on my docket too, because it's not going away. People care about it. It's the beginning. We talked about it. Americans retailers have a new target customer, the 26-year-old millennial. They have taken the place of the baby boomers. And so, you know, the baby boomers used to be the top. They had the corner on diapers and, you know, luxury handbags and cars and things like that. But now
they're going to have the market on diapers again soon.
Oh, see, Kimmy, every now and again, you get a good one in there. That was one point for Kimmy. So Jimmy Singer, real quick, before you tell us about the about your event coming up, you made a comment that in this article, they were saying, you know, so many millennials have not hit all major life milestones, like living away from parents, married, living with the child, entering the labor force. And you said you bucked that trend. Tell us about that.
Well, no, I particularly was saying there are a couple of milestones that I had kind of bucked, but I was surprised to some extent by that, but also not surprised. There was the some of that trend there. It was very interesting because there are a few different milestones that folks had have in this generation haven't met. And that is there's the marriage one, which I definitely not met that one.
But he's single, ladies, so check out his website, Jimmy Sangenberger on KDMT.
Yeah, and there's also the one about children, having children. I have not met that one either. There is the one about being in the workforce. I have met that one. And there's also the one about essentially living out on your own, which I have met. So there are two out of four. But I have not met all four of those. But I wasn't surprised that a great many of millennials haven't. In fact, about a quarter have met those four milestones, but three quarters have not. And I wasn't surprised all that much by that because of the student loan situation and some of the other issues. So that's more what I was talking about with the guest this morning and also with my discussion was that it didn't surprise me too much.
Awesome. Well, Jimmy Sangenberger, you are the president and CEO of MillennialPolicyCenter.org, and you have an event coming up. Tell us what it is.
It's called Blues, Brews, and Policy Views. So the Millennial Policy Center is an exciting new think tank for the millennial generation that's focused on public policy issues and really trying to reach out to, be a voice to, and on behalf of the millennial generation. And this is a fun event to kind of cut loose, sit back, relax, and have a good old time. We're going to have a band called the Millennial Falcons Blues Band that we've put together. We're going to be playing some blues music this Saturday night from 6 to 8 p.m., and it's just going to be a relaxing evening. We're not going to be doing too much policy work, but there's a chance to have some good conversations, and it's going to be from 6 to 8 in the evening, put on by the Millennial Policy Center in South Denver. Tickets just $20, including dinner and a drink ticket. And it's just a chance to listen to some music and recognize that while there are so many different policy issues and important topics of conversation that are going on, Molly, right now, they can be exhausting. They can be divisive. And it's time to recognize that we can come together, we can relax, we can have a good time, talk about some issues, but at the same time, enjoy ourselves. And that's really what this is about, is just cutting loose and having a good time. I'll be playing the harmonica. So if you've ever wanted to listen and see in person Jimmy Sangenberger play the harmonica, this is a great chance.
I would love to see that. Oh, my gosh.
I would love to see that, too. See, and that's one of the things as far as hanging out with adults will let you do is learn how to do things like play the harmonica and use a measuring tape and know that you should have sunlight where your plants are in the planter. Anyway, thanks, Jimmy Sangenberger. So to find out more about your event and about all you're doing, MillennialPolicyCenter.org.
That's right. MillennialPolicyCenter.org is where you can get tickets and details. Again, $20 for dinner, drink ticket, and also to just have a good time listening to some great music. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thanks, Jimmy. We'll talk to you next time. Everybody check him out. Same place right here, KDMT, Monday to Friday, 6 to 9 a.m.
Wow. He may not be married because he's working so hard.
I know. You've got to balance life. Mm-hmm. You've got to find balance. All right, let's get back to Stephen Kessler because, Stephen, you're millennial, and you were explaining to us the multiple pronouns.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And so let's continue on that. And then also because, you know, you're doing your doctorate right now at the University of Rochester, you've been in the college campuses a lot more recently than Kimmy and I have. So we want to hear what it's like there in relation to the pronouns. So continue.
Sure. So the universities are really advocating and pushing this on people, that they want people to be able to choose their gender, their pronoun, whatever they feel comfortable with. And if you make some kind of counterpoint to them that, I forget the guy's name, but he was at Johns Hopkins University. He was the leading psychiatrist in the field who studied transgender people for a long time.
I think I remember that guy, yeah.
Yeah, he said it's a mental disorder. And the American Association of Pediatrics came out and they said, it's child abuse if you transition your children.
Right.
That is not seen as making a reasoned argument. You are a bigot. And that's really what's been going on our campuses, is this straw man where, you know, you disagree, Nazi. You disagree with me, white supremacist. and you disagree with me, you're transphobic. As though, like, how many trans people in most people's lives do we ever really encounter on a regular basis? So for you to sit here and say that so many of us are transphobic is really, it's really a stretch. And so
and I feel like I must say right now, sure, to remember, for everybody to remember, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. So don't be bullied by a name. All right, continue.
Sure, sure.
Stephen, I want to ask you this. I'm sitting here as you're talking about this, and if you are this person on the other side that's throwing out these names of, you know, somebody disagrees, instead of, you know, engaging in the battle of ideas, you call them names. I think in a way then they sit back and there's kind of a superiority.
Yes, yes. There's a moral authority that, for whatever reason, and I struggled to kind of figure it out, and I think it's because conservatism is never taught. The reason I became a conservative was because I was first taught finally what it meant. And so they think that the conservatives are the good guys. That's their narrative. Conservative or liberal good, conservative evil. Conservatives have a different narrative. We think it's common sense versus like crazy people. Oh, you're going to let men choose their restrooms now? Like that's a crazy thing to a lot of conservatives now. And so because I think it's never taught, there is a moral superiority that they believe that they're doing, you know, the Lord's work, so to speak, that they have the higher ground. It's actually, I'm really...
Now, which side are you saying is that? The conservatives or the...
The liberals.
They think they're doing the Lord's work, huh?
Because it's never been taught to them. So like if you were to talk to them about immigration, you know, why are conservatives kind of opposed to open immigration? Well, the conservative thinks the family unit is the central unit of life, so the country is just an extension of the family. Mm-hmm. And that's like giving money to the neighbors when our windows are broken. Yeah. And so like they're never taught this, so they don't know, they don't have any understanding to the conservative side, and they view the conservative party as they view conservatives as the Republicans. And I don't always agree with
I tell you, there's a lot of Republicans that are not conservative.
No. Yeah, sure, yeah. Sure.
And the word conservative is a nasty word, but yet the word conserve, mm-hmm, energy, you know, you know, all that is a good word. And I mean, it's almost like it's what, 1984, where all the words are, sure, all the words are changing, aren't they, Stephen?
Yeah, yeah. We're really on the precipice of some kind of revolution. I hate to say it, but I really think that it's possible we might be having another civil war.
Really? Oh my gosh, I'm hoping we stay on the battlefield of ideas, you know it?
But if liberals think they're doing the Lord's work, it seems like I hear them, you know, pull out certain parts of the Bible to quote, but they use them incorrectly. So are they really
That was really more of a euphemism, that they're on the side of truth and justice, okay, and they're the good guys. It's basically, yeah, good guys versus bad guys. Yeah. And I think it largely has to do with just ignorance, that it's never taught to anyone. Why? Because our K-12 institutions are liberal. They go to graduate schools of education, and they get indoctrinated there, and then they get to college and forget it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've been, I was talking to somebody the other day, and he said that he thinks that the liberalism, the progressivism, that they are in fact the zealots of yesterday. That, you know, they do want to tell you how to live your life. And if you don't, we're going to fine you. We're going to close your business. There's a whole bunch of different things. Whereas in true conservatism, we figure that we can work these things out in kind of the free market of ideas. So we only have about a minute, and we're going to want to quote. So quick wrap up here. We're with Stephen Kessler, and then we've got a great quote that you're going to share with everybody.
Sure. So I think the most important thing that our colleges and universities can do is what Russell Kirk said of Irving Babbitt, that Irving Babbitt, who was T.S. Eliot's mentor at Harvard, his chief and principal aim was returning the struggle for good and evil back to the breast of the individual.
Wow.
And so I'll give you two quotes. One Russell Kirk modified from Simone Weil is that order is the first need of the human soul. And number two, every right must be married to a correspondent duty, because without, yes, that said duty, they degrade into vice.
Yes.
Thanks so much for having me on your show, ladies. And thanks to your producer. Thanks.
Stephen Kessler, it has really been fun. You think you'd come back? Could we do this again sometime?
Yeah. It's a blast. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we love this.
We love it.
Thinking about big ideas. And
absolutely.
And I do hope that we can continue to battle in the battle of ideas. It is a little scary with this Antifa stuff and you know, people taking away businesses, using government to take away businesses if you disagree. But mm-hmm, that's why Molly and I do what we do every day. We are searching, yeah, for truth.
And if we're searching for the truth, we need to get closer to where the this other sounding board is being bounced around. And so we need to get close to millennials and people who are on college campuses so we can hear that kind of stuff, because that kind of stuff just sounds crazy to me. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like, I was put like, oh, you guys have a tin hat on. They're not telling people that they're not the sex that they were born as. And I'm like, oh, no, they really are. So it's good to know.
I think Hugh Hewitt said, look down. If there's something there, you're a boy. And if there's not, you're a girl. How's that?
It's a good place to start, at least, right? We don't want to be science deniers, do we?
You got it. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, signing off. Thank you, Stephen Kessler. Thank you, Damon, for running the boards there. And we will be back tomorrow, 5 to 6, KDMT, 1690 AM.
Thanks a lot. Thanks. Good night.